Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I haven't had my coffee yet, but for some reason that I don't understand yet, thinking about this episode and getting ready to do this episode has left me invigorated. On top of that, I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can watch me play in the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we are talking about the Investigator.
Now, before we get into all of that, we just want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we're not providing any kind of official answers here. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Now, Luis, when we were kind of talking about doing this episode, you brought up such a really cool idea to think about. You said, you know, why is the Investigator even a class? In theory, every adventurer kind of already is an Investigator.
Yeah, indeed. So why do you think it might be a class? What do you think had earned it the spot of a class?
So I actually think that the Investigator is mislabeled. I don't think it should be called the Investigator. I think it should be called the Strategist or even the Tactician. Because the Investigator is the martial class that uses intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. They're the one who thinks about the fight and enacts it. This is David and David versus Goliath, you know?
I think calling it the Strategist or the Tactician might suggest a more military focus than people might think. They might be like, oh, I'm getting the Warlord from 4th edition or something like that, you know, someone that can tell someone else to do a thing. I think maybe something like an analyst might be a better word for that. But I think investigator also does come with a lot of inherent understanding of, oh, this is what they do. They investigate, and, you know, analyze might be good. But yeah, I feel that. Honestly, I think from what I can tell, and from what little insight I know, I obviously had no design input on this class. I'm not one of the designers. I'm just a developer who does his own little thing over in Lost Omens lands. This class is very much the storyteller class. What I mean by storyteller class is in RPGs, there are different types of games. There are some that are very mechanical heavy, very crunchy, as some people put it, like Pathfinder, for example. Lots of rules that specifically tell you what to do and how you can do them. And then there are some games that are much more narrative focused. You know, something like Dungeon World is more narrative focused. You can get all over the place in terms of how much narrative control there is in a given game. But Investigator definitely seems the one that has the most power to manipulate how the story is going and what's happening in a narrative compared to just adding numbers or doing an attack or you know, fighting in combat. They can kind of change the flow of a story as they go on. Not to an enormous degree, but more so than any other class, I feel.
Now, one of the problems that we're going to have with finding investigators from popular culture is that it's hard to pick somebody who doesn't also have the chance to maybe be something else. For example, right? Like Sam and Dean from Supernatural. Man, I love those guys. Mm-hmm. And they investigate these mysteries all the time and they hunt down the monsters. But there's also such a strong argument to be made for something like Fighter or Ranger with them as well.
Yeah.
So to find examples from pop culture that are explicitly investigator, we're really going to have to dive deep into Law and Order and CSI and Sherlock Holmes.
Yes. I think one that comes to mind, I mean, there are so many investigators and so many mystery series, right, that you can just, a million detectives out there that you can work and just very easy to transform into a fantasy character. Like you said, grab anyone off of CSI or Law and Order, and then you have a character. I feel like you might have a better example, though, of more fantasy-oriented detectives and investigators.
Oh, are we talking about Harry Dresden from the Dresden Files? I love that guy.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. Tell me about, or any of the books. Tell me about Harry Dresden.
I also didn't read any of the books. I watched the TV show
There you go.
once, and I thought it was so cool. This guy's kind of like, I'd say he's either investigator with wizard or wizard with investigator, you know, when he's solving supernatural things. It kind of came out like when around the time when like Supernatural came out. So it was a little bit in the same theme, but more wizard focused, right? But here's one. The Scooby-Doo gang, yo. That's definitely investigators.
Yes, absolutely. Some with more with better roll results is what I'll say. Some roll a lot better than others.
I also think that in explicitly fantasy terms, like, you know, our prototypical like medieval magic settings, right? I do think that investigators are also the advisors to the king or something, you know? The people, this is who the king trusts to do like their work, you know? Go meet with their dignitary and see what you can find out. That's an investigator, right?
Yeah. And if we're looking for a specific example at a Galarian, wouldn't you know it, Galarian has pretty much every trope covered, and detectives and investigators are no exception here. There is a group based out of Ustalav, out of spooky land, Ustalav, called the Sleepless Agency, which is just a big group that provides private security and investigative services. They're really cool. You can be kind of a hard-boiled detective that comes out of fantasy land in Galarian and have an organization to tie yourself to right away if you want.
Yeah, so I guess the biggest takeaway from all this is that the investigator name comes with a lot of concepts like, you know, detectives and solving crimes, but it's so much broader than that. I really think that we have to think outside that name. We have to think outside of investigator and just look to, here are characters that solve problems by thinking really hard about it and not necessarily translating that thought into magic. Speaking of a character who does that pretty well, Luis, is Batman going to be a hard fit for the investigator?
Well, let me see. I think someone once mentioned that Batman might be the world's greatest detective. So I think this wouldn't be too tough to figure out. Batman originated back in the day in a little comic series called Detective Comics. So again, I think he's a pretty good fit here. It just so happens to be Batman is probably playing with the dual class rules, playing a gestalt character that is both investigator and something like a fighter or a rogue, right? Because he's also very good at beating people up and doing all this other stuff, but he's so great at being a detective. He solves a lot of mysteries. And I think, honestly, Batman's best stories are when he's solving mysteries and not just dealing with, beating up bad guys or the big crossover events or anything. Nitty gritty, down to earth, kind of very specific local stories are where Batman works best. And he's very good at noticing clues and using all that is available to him, which is a lot because he's a billionaire. So his computer and all his gadgets to kind of gather all the information he needs and solve whatever mystery is at hand. Batman is a very good investigator, and probably this is it. This is where he scores 100%. This class scores 100% on the Batman test and also gets 30 points of extra credit along with it.
Awesome.
So you got to tell me though, how can an investigator be a Viking? I feel like anyone can solve mysteries and stuff, as we mentioned before, anyone can solve problems, but what makes a Viking specifically an investigator?
Well, on top of that, let's not forget that the Viking test is which kinds of Vikings are investigators too. It's kind of both of those. And this is a question that you listeners have posed to me a few times outside of the act, you know, the episode feed, right? And I've given some answers, like some small answers, but I haven't had the time to fully talk about how the investigator is a Viking and how and which Vikings would be investigators. So today, I am cheating. The point, the point of the Viking test. We added this because all of my builds were Vikings, and we said, Lauren. I said to myself, I said, Lauren, all my builds can't be Vikings. We're going to make the Viking test so you can talk about it here in the Viking test, and then you can go do a non-Viking build. My cheat is that my build today is the Vikingest Viking of all. And a Viking hero like Beowulf. Hmm. And I will discuss that when it is time.
I see. Ah, you're getting teed up for something just down the road, huh?
That's right, that's right.
Well then, let's take a look at the investigator and see what makes it tick. If you're playing an investigator, your key ability score is going to be intelligence. You are smart. You can use logic and deductive reasoning for a lot. And wouldn't you know it, your ability scores reflect that. You start with hit points equal to 8 plus your constitution modifier, so they're pretty tough. They're tougher than a spellcaster, but of course not as tough as someone like a barbarian or a fighter. And initially, you start off an expert in perception, which is much better than most people are. I think only rogue and ranger are getting expert at the gate, so you are very good at noticing things and investigating and searching for stuff.
You're going to be trained in fortitude, expert in reflex and will, trained in society as you navigate the complex cities where these crimes happen. And you're going to be trained in one or more skills determined by your methodology, which we're going to talk about later. Trained in additional skills equal to 4 plus your int. You have a lot of skills. But the big one that I want to draw attention to, trained in martial weapons, right? Mm-hmm. You are a fighter, right? You're just a fighter who uses your brain.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you have much more training than a rogue, because a rogue only has a smattering of martial weapons. In addition to that, you're also trained in unarmed attacks, like most people tend to be. You're trained in light armor and trained in unarmored defense. And finally, you're trained in your investigator class DC. Nothing out of the ordinary there, but I think the first big thing you'll notice is just how much one of your first class features gets. You can be on the case and as an investigator. And what that means is, anything that's really going on in an adventure or your campaign or whatever, you can declare that's a lead you're going to pursue. That's the case that you're going to be on. So you can choose a specific monster, a specific location you're looking for, a specific item you're looking for, things like that, to become your lead. And to do that, you have the pursue a lead activity. You can spend 1 minute to kind of investigate that thing or gather your thoughts about a given thing. You might find a footprint or a claw mark somewhere, or you might see a sketch of an item that you're looking for, and you can spend a minute to study that and set that as your lead. And you can have up to 2 leads at once. And while you have your lead going, whenever you're attempting a perception check or a skill check related to investigating that subject of your lead, you get a +1 circumstance bonus to your check. So things like, you know, society checks to recall knowledge about a thing, or maybe survival checks to track that creature that you're following, things like that, you need to get bonuses to. And you can have 2 leads going at once. Whenever you find different information that might be a brand new lead, to the best of your knowledge, you can drop one of your old leads and pursue a new lead. But you're going to be pursuing a lead a lot, because that's what investigators are all about.
And you're so good at this that even when your allies are kind of pursuing the same lead, every 10 minutes you can use your reaction to clue them in and let them have your pursue a lead bonus for that check. On top of that, the combat ability that you get, and this is kind of what I think is the meat and potatoes of the investigator, is devise a stratagem. Now, what's interesting about this ability is it's such a sleeper. Like, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but mathematically, this ability is a huge deal, okay? What you do is, for one action, you take a look at an enemy, and you throw a d20. On your next strike against that enemy, you will use that d20 roll, okay? That's almost the whole thing, but another aspect of it that kind of helps is that if you're using the right weapon, so like an agile or a finesse weapon, you can trade out your strength or dex and use your intelligence on that roll instead. Or on the attack roll, not on the damage roll, so keep that in mind. But to kind of shore up that damage, well, we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah. One fun thing about devise a stratagem is that if you happen to devise a stratagem about a creature that is your lead, you don't have to spend an action to do that. You can just do so as a free action to figure out what your attack roll is going to be. And as you mentioned, yes, it's very useful for combat, because even if you roll very poorly, let's say you roll a 2 on your die to devise a stratagem, which means that the next time you attack that creature this turn, you have to use that 2. You can just decide to not attack that creature. You can attack someone else and realize, oh, I don't have an opening right now, or this isn't a good time to attack. I'll attack someone else. Or you can do something else. You can maybe intimidate them, or you can try to...
an athletics check to trip them, you know?
Yeah, athletics check. It's not a strike. It's an attack, but it's not a strike. So something like that, you can realize, oh, trying to attack them isn't the best way to go with it. Let's do something else. And that can help a lot in combat. I mean, even if it's not dealing damage to the one creature you wanted, doing something else and knowing you're not going to mess this thing up is very helpful.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned the math of it, right? If you know you're going to fail to hit that creature, and then but you really want to hit him, so you waste your attack on that, and then you, I don't know, like throw a -5 hit at him. Mathematically, you're kind of taking some hits here. But this lets you know that that's going to fail. So instead of wasting some pluses on there, you just attack somebody else. And then you use your next strike. Oh, no, I guess you still wouldn't. You do all the things that Luis just said.
Yeah. You wait till next round to attack him or to do something that isn't an attack. You're smarter than that. You know better. So after you have figured out that you can devise a strategy and pursue a lead and clue people in, you also have to select your methodology, which is basically your expertise, what kind of thing you're very good at as an investigator. You're good at a lot of things. You're very skillful. But in particular, you might be focused on alchemical sciences. You gain the training. You gain training in crafting, which is used to create alchemical items, and the alchemical crafting skill feat. But you also gain a formula book. You become a quasi-investigator. And every day you get a number of special vials called versatile vials that you can turn into an alchemical item kind of on the fly, equal to your intelligence modifier. It isn't many, but probably enough to be useful in a pinch. And you also get the quick tincture ability for one action, convert one of your versatile vials into an alchemical item for which you know the formula. Just kind of on the fly. So if you need suddenly an antitoxin or an alchemist fire or whatever, grab one of your vials and turn it into that right away for whatever you need.
I do have a little bit of beef with alchemical sciences in that it doesn't let you use it to make poisons. Come on, guys, I want to murder people.
Oh, that's true. I don't want to mislead. It specifically calls out chemical elixirs or tools, so no bombs, no alchemist fire. My mistake.
That's right. So you'll need to actually take the alchemist dedication if you want bombs, or maybe the poisoner dedication if you want poisons.
Not necessarily. You can always make them with your downtime. You have the crafting to do
true.
That.
That's
you
true.
You just can't make one on the fly. So if you prepare ahead, you can definitely have your poisons. You can definitely have your bombs. But it's something you have to plan for in advance, rather than just try to assume that you can have it whenever you need.
If you're an empiricist, you are kind of the detective. You're the one who specializes in using logic, reasoning, and the powers of deduction to solve your problems. This is going to give you access to That's Odd, the investigator feat, which is really cool. And I know we don't normally go into the class feats, but we're probably going to have to go into that one, I think, because
yeah,
we're getting a lot of questions about it.
Yes.
On top of that, you're going to get Expeditious Inspection, which is a free action that you can use once every 10 minutes, where you use your recall knowledge, your seek, or your sense motive with a free action. That's pretty good.
Yep, for free. You can also dabble in forensic medicine, which is both helpful for patching up allies who have been hurt, but also learning the methods and information about a character who has died or wounds that people have. You're trained in medicine and gain the forensic acumen feat, which, if you look that up, is all about studying a body and determining the damage and cause of death and stuff like that at a much faster rate, as well as battle medicine, which lets you patch someone up on the fly. When you use battle medicine, when you get a success or critical success, the target recovers an extra number of hit points equal to your level, and you can patch them up again after only 1 hour rather than a whole day like normal, which of course you can always affect that later with your skill feats, but you get this out of the gate so you don't have to worry about getting a skill feat right away to make that faster.
With the last one, the interrogation focus, you can play good cop. You get the no cause for alarm skill feat, which lets you reduce the frightened condition by like all kinds of creatures around you. Just whoever's around you, you can try to reduce their frightened condition. And when you make an impression, you can pursue the creature that you're conversing with as the lead of your pursuit. And you can also get the pointed question action.
Pointed question action is actually your attempt at being bad cop. You get to be both good cop and bad cop. While you're talking with someone, you can attempt a diplomacy check just as one action. Just kind of throw out this question. Ah, but you wanted him to get hurt. Or, you were jealous of them or something like that, right? And if you succeed on your diplomacy check, they have to answer your question. They might not have to tell you the truth, but they definitely have to answer. And you get a bonus to your perception check to notice if they're lying to you when they answer. Whether or not the value of your bonus is determined whether or not you get a crit or a normal success. But if things go bad, they might get upset at you for trying to threaten or press them with such a question.
Well, speaking of threatening and pressing, Luis, this is a good time for me to ask you. Why are we not seeing intimidation as one of the skills that you can use for interrogation?
Couldn't tell you. I didn't design the class. I think it might be because if you use intimidation, you'd have to use the coercion ability, the coercion action, which normally comes with further complications where someone might report you to the local guard or something and say, hey, this guy's trying to bully me or whatever. I could definitely see an argument for saying, go ahead and attempt an intimidation check, but it isn't coercion. But that's really GM territory. There might be a feat in the future that modifies that, but that might not feel as great if you're trying to do intimidation focus build, especially because interrogation definitely feels like it should be intimidation
focused. It does, doesn't it?
When you say interrogate, you think, "Ah, oh, I'm going to intimidate this guy." I don't know. I wish I could tell you the answer to that. You're going to have to ask Logan Bonner, who designed this class, on why that was. I definitely feel like it could be a thing. Maybe if you bug the people at Paizo that aren't me enough, they might consider adding that in a future update for the APG or something.
We also have to talk about how investigators get strategic strike. This is another tool in your attacking toolbox. What it does is if you have used your devise a stratagem and you are using your intelligence modifier as part of your devise a stratagem, you get some extra precision damage. Now it starts out as 1d6, but it increases pretty quick. It goes up at 5, 9, 13, 17. Like this is... Is this on par with Rogue?
That's what I was about to check, actually. I'm pretty sure it is. So you get one... No, I think you get more than Rogue.
Wow, so this is stronger than a sneak attack.
You get 5 dice on this. A Rogue gets a total of 4 dice, because they get one at 1st, 5th, 11th, and 17th. They don't get... Yeah. You get,
but a rogue can use their sneak attack more than once a turn. You're only going to devise a stratagem once a turn.
Correct.
So, something to keep in mind when you're building your builds to make sure you're using devise a stratagem and strategic strike.
Yes. And as this is all stuff that happens at first level, by the way. Everything we've just talked about, that's all the way through first level.
Yeah, it's a cool class.
There's a lot to work with right out of the gate. At second level, you're going to start getting your skill feats and your skill increases like normal, except because an investigator is very skill-focused, you're going to get skill increases at second level, and then every level thereafter, much like a rogue. And you're going to get skill feats every two levels like normal, but then, starting at third level, you're also getting skillful lessons, which are bonus skill feats that are specifically focused on intelligence, wisdom, or charisma-based skills. Effectively, you're getting the same amount of skill feats as a rogue would be, except that half of them are kind of limited to which types of skills you can use.
Luis, I'm starting to think that maybe the investigator out-rogues the rogue.
In a lot of ways, yes. But there's also a lot of stuff the rogue does that I think is better than the way the investigator does. The rogue is going to be a better trap finder in the end. The rogue is going to be a better debilitator in the end. So I think there's enough deviation of the two that you can have a bunch of overlap but still have that unique feeling between the two classes.
Now I'm just thinking of builds. If I made a rogue with the investigator archetype, so I get access to devise a stratagem. Oh man, there's so much cool stuff you could do.
Especially if you play a mastermind rogue that uses intelligence as well.
I have so many builds on my phone about a masterminding character that might even be my next podcast character. I'm so excited about it.
One other thing you get at third level is keen recollection, which specifically calls out any skill checks that you make that are untrained. Instead of getting a +0 bonus to that, you add your level to them. So you're kind of quasi-trained in anything that you use to recall knowledge. So you know a lot of stuff. You can remember a lot of stuff.
At ninth level, your pursue a lead bonus goes to +2. And at 11th level, this is pretty fun. You can attempt any skill check that requires you to be trained, even if you're not trained. It's because you've got deductive improvisation.
Yeah. In addition to that, anything you are trained basically counts as if you're an expert, and anything that you're an expert in basically counts as if you're a master in. So effectively, every proficiency rank is treated as if it were one better up until master. 13th level, here's the thing I want to call out. Normally, everyone's getting their perception bonuses or proficiency increase, but at 13th level, you become legendary in perception. Welcome to being one of the three classes that becomes legendary in perception, and that means nothing will elude your sight.
Incredible.
And finally, at 19th level, you become a master detective. This is the most, I think this is the greatest example of the narrative power, narrative control that an investigator has in the game. So when you're pursuing the subject of a lead, and if you enter a location that includes a clue related to this lead that you're pursuing, the GM has to tell you that there is a clue in this area. So they don't have to specifically say, hey, that note on the desk is a clue, but they'll say, there's an item here that's a clue, or there's a spell going on here that's a clue, or there's a person here that's related to your lead. And once you find it, then they have to tell you, hey, you found that clue. So you will be aware of when there's important information. If there happens to be multiple clues in the room, the GM specifically calls out one as the thing that they're going to tell you. But anytime you find a clue related to a lead, the GM has to tell you whether or not it's the one that they called out. So you're going to be aware of all the information that's important and anything that's relevant to your lead, which, like I said, helps you kind of take control of the narrative, helps you know what is important, what isn't, what is useful to the story at hand. So it's really cool. It does come on very late, but it's still a pretty neat thing, and everyone gets it for free.
Now, before we move on to builds, let's real quick talk about That's Odd, because it's odd, and there's a lot of questions about it. What this does is when you enter a new location, such as a room or corridor, your GM is going to tell you something that's kind of out of place. And maybe not even physically out of place. Like, one of the things that it mentions is that there's nothing you can reasonably pick up, you know? Mm-hmm. We get a lot of questions about how to handle this. Should we save those for the questions, or should we just kind of talk about it here?
I think we can just talk about it. So the feat specifically calls out, if it's something very obvious, such as a large blood stain in the middle of the floor when you come in, that's not the kind of thing the GM would call out. They would instead call out something like, hey, you noticed that the desk drawer may be damaged or something, right? And that's it. They won't say anything else. They won't have to tell you that the reason it's damaged is because someone tried to break in because it was locked or something like that. Now, instead, they just kind of hint you to where to look, and it's up to you to still look and determine, based on any roles that are related and stuff like that, whether or not you find anything. I think the organized play campaign, Pathfinder Society, did a very useful thing in adding a clarification and some guidance to the That's Odd feat that I'm going to read right here verbatim. I think will help out a lot of GMs trying to figure out what to do with That's Odd. So it specifically says that GM should provide a character with That's Odd a hint whenever the character enters a room with hidden aspects, specifically with regards to things like hidden passageways, creatures or hazards, or valuables. So with the hidden passageway, it gives the example of there might be scuff marks near a bookcase that's actually a swinging door. With a creature or hazard, it mentions the possibility of drippage on the floor from an unseen fungus growing on the rafters. Or with valuables, it might notice a bunched carpet over a secret compartment in the floor that contains a bag of coins. So GM doesn't need to provide clues for rooms that have no significant secrets or hidden features, but it's still up to the character to investigate that thing that the GM points out. So in the case of that bunched up carpet, they still have to succeed at a perception check to notice a trapdoor or something. You might, you know, who knows? And if the investigator doesn't find anything, they might still be able to say, hey, there's this bunched up carpet to their friends, to their allies, and that might still be enough to eventually someone finds it. But just noticing that detail, that thing out of place, is really the thing you're looking for.
Now, Luis, I have to kind of devil's advocate this a little bit. What does Master Detective do at 19th level that this doesn't?
So, specifically, Master Detective is calling out clues that are related to your lead. So you can enter a room and notice that there is the possibility of a secret door, and that secret door just might exist because the person has a very personal item that they keep hidden, right? But this person might not be related to your lead at all. You might just be walking into someone's room and finding that, like, oh, hey, they have a trap door here. But if you are following, let's say, you know, a serial killer as your lead, and you enter a home that's been attacked or ransacked, the GM, when you have Master Detective, would specifically call out, oh, there's a clue in here related to the serial killer that you're searching. They left behind a clue in the form of an item, right? Maybe they accidentally left their weapon after the attack, or a piece of their clothing ripped off or something. And that's specifically what Master Investigator is going to call out, is that this is related to your lead that you're following at this moment, or one of your leads that you're following at this moment. And the GM has to tell you that this is related to your lead. You can find stuff all day with That's Odd, but Master Detective specifically calls out that it's related to the lead that you care about at this moment.
I think as a GM, if I had an investigator player with That's Odd, mm-hmm. I'd probably put a lot of red herrings in there too, you know? Like rooms that maybe there's really nothing going on, like you find some fish bones in the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, just something to throw them off a little bit.
You can, but I warn you that might lead to frustration on the player's end if they're like, well, everything I find or every other thing I find has been a red herring. So why do I care about all the clues that you're giving me with That's Odd? Though there is some kind of, you can kind of go back on that and specifically call out that you could take the red herring feat to know which ones are red herrings and which ones aren't. But it's a tricky rope to walk, I feel. Especially if you're not used to having to come up with a clue for every room that matters. You don't have to do that. Not every room has something that is odd. Sometimes it's just a room that's full of barrels because that's where they keep all the fish, right? And that's it. There's nothing else going on in here. It can be tough to work with. You might have to set reminders for yourself as a GM. And you might, if you're writing a pre-written adventure or something that you've written, you might take the time in advance to set up what those clues are and have them written down rather than try to come up with something on the fly, which might help out a lot more as well.
Most of us, when we GM, we prep notes. I would add that's odd notes to that prep work.
I think following that Pathfinder Society organized play guidance will help out a lot of people. Knowing the kind of things you should be pointing out, giving examples, really does help figure out how to play with that's odd.
Now, speaking of examples, Luis, how would you build an investigator?
How would I build an investigator? Let's find out. Well, I think I feel like I'm really inclined to make snipers, or feel like I have been a lot recently. So I'm going to make a sniper investigator, someone that probably uses a longbow. Whatever you want to do, they're going to be doing ranged attacks, probably hiding while doing so, doing from a distance. And I'm specifically going to take the forensic medicine methodology, just because I like healing buddies. And the other stuff that the other methodologies give you don't really hinder the class build, don't really help it in any way. So I just think medicine would be fun, especially because later there's a feat that's related to it that can kind of be helpful. At first level, with my first level feat, I'm going to take the known weakness feat, which basically says when you devise a stratagem against a creature, you also attempt to recall knowledge about them. And if you succeed, you get a bonus to your attack rolls, your first attack roll on that turn. And you can also yell out to someone, hey, you know, aim for the leg or whatever, and your allies gain a +1 bonus to the next attack roll within the next round. And you know, that's very useful to maybe stay from a distance, study your target while you're devising a stratagem, and learn a little bit about them if you succeed, and make it easier to hit. At second level, you're going to be taking shared stratagem, which when you successfully attack someone that you devise a stratagem against, perhaps the guy that you called out earlier, you make an opening. You hit them after devising a stratagem, and then you choose an ally. That creature is flat-footed to the ally on their next attack for the next round. You've made an opening, basically, for your ally, which can be very helpful. at fourth level, you're going to take Scalpel's Point, which requires you to be taking the forensic medicine methodology. When you critically hit against a creature on which you substituted your attack roll due to devising a stratagem, if you deal piercing or slashing damage, which you do with a bow, you also deal 1d6 persistent bleed damage. Your knowledge of anatomy makes it easier for you to open up wounds that are really painful. At sixth level, you're going to take Thorough Research, which says when you succeed at Recall Knowledge, you learn an extra fact about the subject. And if you critically succeed, you learn even more, which is subject to the GM's discretion. But this is very good for learning a lot of weaknesses or special abilities on the fly. And you're going to be devising a stratagem a lot anyway. And because we took that feat at first level, you're also going to be doing lots of Recall Knowledges as well. So you're just going to kind of tie into each other and be really helpful. Eighth level, we're going to take Blind Fight, which calls out that if you're attacking someone that's concealed, you don't have to succeed a flat check to target them, which is very good for ranged attackers because it's easy for people to set up fogs and miss or hide to gain concealment, and this kind of negates all that. And you're also not flat-footed against creatures that are hidden from you, and it's much easier to target a hidden creature. So it's just very good, very fun thing. And at 10th level, I took the sixth level feat, Predictive Purchase, which gives you some feats that let you basically that lets you kind of reach into your backpack and have anything you need ready to go as if you bought it because you thought ahead of time, because investigators are smart, which can be really helpful, and I think it's just a really fun feat. You can use this once and then have to go back to have a chance to shop to be able to use it again. But this lets you grab your items really quick. There wasn't anything really great at 10th level, but feel free to swap that out for whatever you want. If you don't like Scalpel's Point, you can swap that out for something else as well. But that's the way I did it. It's really you're devising a stratagem and recalling knowledge to learn about your enemies and then hitting them from afar while calling out, now hit that guy, now hit that guy.
Yeah, it's a true investigating investigator. So why do I do this to myself? That's what I ask myself every day. All right. So the Scandinavians, their culture obviously embraced strength. Like a strong Viking was a good Viking, right? But what we forget is that they also thought very highly of cleverness, and that's how this comes together. Because your most famous Vikings of all were both strong and clever. Look at Ragnar Lothbrok. Look at Beowulf. Look at King Harald, right? That is why, for the Viking test and for my investigator build, I have made the Viking hero or the Viking protagonist, depending on which word choice you like here. What we're going to do is I'm obviously taking human because the Vikings are humans. I'm doing that, but you don't have to do that. The build will work with anything. I'm going to go with, let me tell you a bit about the stats here. We're making strength and int both 16, because mathematically that's going to make a lot of sense. This isn't as mad as it feels, so we don't actually need like charisma or dex or wisdom or anything. We don't actually need those. We can kind of just focus on strength and intelligence. And a little bit of con's going to help us a lot too. We can use our heritage to get armor proficiency. We can use an ancestry feat to get shield bear, which just gives us access to shield block, which we're going to use later because we are the Vikingest Viking there ever was. We're going to take known weaknesses as our class feat because, you know, Beowulf had to investigate Grendel, all right? And you gotta know about the weaknesses. You gotta, you know, do your best. And we're going to be an empiricist to give us access to recall knowledge, seek, and sense motive as a free action once per 10 minutes. I feel like that could help us out a lot. But now we get into what we actually do. Because, Luis, I'm noticing a trend here too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Apparently, you use your builds and you take class feats. And I never take class feats. Which is why I still argue, and I will argue it till the day I am done arguing it, that Pathfinder 2nd Edition is best played with the free archetype variant rule.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think almost all of my builds kind of show why. At 2nd level, we're taking the Viking dedication. Yeah, we're going all out. When I said this was the Vikingest Viking I've ever made, I meant it. So we're taking Viking dedication. Hell, on top of that, we're using the Raider background. And with Viking Shieldbearer Ancestry Feat, yeah, we're going all in for this one. That's how good of a Viking investigator can be. At 3rd level, I'm actually going to go with... I already did that first. At 3rd level, you can go with Armor Proficiency, but I did it at first because I went human. The reason that helps is because it lets us kind of dump dex. So we can get our armor a little bit higher, you know, something like a breastplate would just be really helpful. So you don't have to worry about dex as much. At 4th level, we're going to go with Hurling Charge to be so ridiculously historic. A lot of times in history, Vikings would go into battle wielding their shield and a throwing spear, right? Or like a javelin in Pathfinder. And what they would do is they would throw it, they would charge and draw their weapon along the way. Hurling Charge is that, right? You Pathfinder devs, you gave us something from history, and I like it. And we're going to use that, because Hurling Charge would be a really good two actions to spend after we have devised a stratagem. We dumped dex, so we can devise a stratagem to use our high investigator intelligence to hit solidly into that enemy, and to do all that fun precision damage from Strategic Strike.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we're going to take it level 6, Reactive Shield. We're going to take it level 8, Shielded Stride. We're going to take it level 10, Quick Shield Block, so that we're really getting the most mileage out of our shield. But one of the main things I have to hit on here is that the weapon we're going to pull out after we throw that javelin is probably going to be a hand axe, or what's also known as the hatchet, because it's agile, which means it works with the Strategic Strike. It works with Devise a Stratagem. And it's thrown. So, you know, we've got a little bit more options here. So, yeah, this is the Viking that solves tough problems. This is your hero. This is your Beowulf. This is your Ragnar Lothbrok. That's how an investigator can be a Viking. What do you think, Luis? Is that adequate enough?
I would say so.
Nice. Well, let's see what our patrons and our users have to say, because the first question is from patron Exocited. I'm struggling to find dedications that work well with the investigator. Is this class more of a solo than others, or is that just a failure of imagination?
So, this is a class we brought up earlier, but I honestly feel like the rogue might be something worthwhile as a dedication. You can get extra training, which doesn't really do much for you, but I think at fourth level you can grab the extra precision damage, the sneak attack, for a rogue, which nothing stops you from snacking precision damage from multiple sources, so you don't have to go full dedication with the rogue if you don't want, but grabbing that extra sneak attack, which then is an extra d6 of damage, can be really useful for your attacks. And honestly, let me look at this dedication. Let's look at the investigator dedication really quick.
You can devise a stratagem. Yeah, but you can't do it for intelligence substitutions. And you won't get strategic strike out of it. You're really just using it for the math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, throwing investigator stratagem onto any class can really work. If you're wanting to use the kind of guaranteed roll on that, especially for a class that is likely to get crits like a fighter, you know, guaranteeing a crit is very good. But I think any class can really eventually I think any class can eventually make use of the amount of trading and skill feats that you get if all of your class feats after first level just are going to other archetypes and dedications. You're still getting a tremendous amount of skill feats. You're still getting a tremendous amount of skill training, which can be useful for pretty much any combination of class that you can think of, I feel.
Yeah, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'll say it 100 times more. I think that one of the strengths of 2E is the dedication system, because I think it's harder to find combinations that can't work together well. The only one I can think of off the top of my head that would not really pair well with the investigator is the fighter. Because fighter gives you martial weapons, and as an investigator, you're like, I got that. I don't need that. Mm-hmm. You know? Look, Exocited. Hit me up in the patron chat if you feel like you're having a failure of imagination, and we'll talk about this. I will give you so many ideas how to flavor up an investigator.
Next question here from user UpB, who asks, what's your favorite investigator feat for outside of combat?
Luis, tell me if this is cheating, but I'm gonna have to go with the level 6 predictive purchase. I say it might be cheating because the rogue gets it too.
That was gonna be mine as well. It's so good.
It's so fun.
It's so fun to be ready at anything. I had a player who used, there's a similar set of feats in first edition, and used them to just great effect, and it's so fun, especially because you're getting two skill feats for the price of one class feat, plus the faster drawing of the item. Normally it takes you a whole minute to grab your backpack and get an item. Here you can just do it with two actions. It's great, especially if you get the higher level upgrade at 16th level that lets you kind of just do this willy-nilly. You don't have to worry about getting back to town. You just always have stuff ready to go.
Yeah, I love it so much. I mean, you basically are only limited by your imagination, right? A problem that would be insurmountable in the dungeon. You're like, no. I brought the sovereign glue. We're fine.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I once played a witch who spent most of his money just buying as much mundane equipment for like any situation that could ever come up. And even just actually buying the stuff and having it ready to go was super useful. I can't imagine how much more useful it can be to be like, oh, I didn't even need to plan. I just have it ready whenever I need. It's so great.
Our next one from patron Dom seems like a follow-up to UpB. What is your favorite in-combat investigator feat?
I rather like the second level feat, Athletic Strategist, that lets you swap in your device of stratagem to modify, disarm, grapple, shoves, and trips, all the combat maneuvers, if you will. And you can also swap in intelligence for strength on your athletics check. So it's basically, hey, your device of stratagem now works on all the cool athletics. So So you can just be really smart and know, like, ah, look, they're off balance. So if I hit them just this right way, I can trip them really easily, stuff like that. And that's just really fun. And then in addition to that, you can use it to use the predetermined role from Devise a Stratagem for that as well. But know that if you're going with a strike or an athletics action, if you have this feat, you have to use it. You have to use that die roll, so you can't circumvent the, oh, hey, it only works on strikes, so you can just do an athletics check to grapple or something and not worry about that predetermined roll. Now you're forced to use it on this if it's the first thing you do on the turn.
If you're playing investigator because you're curious about somebody who throws a lot of D6s with their attack, similar to a rogue, I really like the forensic medicine investigator who does scalpel's point, right? Hit him with that critical, and then an extra D6 falls out him every turn with persistent bleed. I think that's so cool. That's the kind of stuff I like to see.
User Ace Wizard asks, what future methodologies would you like to see in the future?
I would like to see a methodology based around poisons. That's what I want to see. I want to see the toxicologist back, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would work. I was thinking maybe like the poisoner archetype, but no, I think having it built into the investigator would probably be better. Mm-hmm. I personally would like to see something that plays a little bit more with combat specifically. Maybe something that fiddles with the Devise a Stratagem action. Maybe like, hey, if you do Devise a Stratagem on someone that you're pursuing a lead, normally it would be a free action, but if you do it as a one action thing, you know, if you upgrade it to something that costs more and it's your lead, maybe you get to roll twice and choose one of the two numbers or something. Or you can roll the Devise a Stratagem, and then if you don't like it, you can actually ignore it and still attack him, right? Or something like that. Some way to fiddle with that just a little bit more, I think, would be interesting and maybe encourage a more combat-focused build.
I want to change my answer. I think that makes my Viking build investigator even better. Because right now I'm just using like a Viking of logic and reasoning. And like, yeah, I mean, that kind of works when you think about like the heroes and, you know. But I think that maybe something more combat focused might be a little bit better.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe we'll see something like
and
that.
And we could call it the tactician or the strategist.
Yes, I think that would be great. Yes.
From No Direction's own Param. As a GM, that's odd, gives me a lot of challenge. How do I remember it and give clues in a way that don't just ruin the whole mystery?
So I had to deal with someone who had an investigator with That's Odd in a game not too long ago. We were playing 10th level characters or something. I asked them to start at high level. I think one thing is, as we mentioned earlier, take notes, have them ready to go on what can be a clue. But I think another way you can do it is maybe actually, depending on how high a level they are, maybe just give them a reward with That's Odd. So sometimes if you're writing pre-written adventure or whatever, you know, the hidden trap door is a DC 15 to find. And at first level, that'd be, you know, a reasonable challenge for you. But if you come back here and it's, you know, hey, we're fifth level characters or 8th level or 10th level or whatever, and the investigator would have a super duper easy time for that, rather than being like, oh, you see some scuff marks on the floor that suggests that there's like a hidden door or something, or you know, that there's a crack along the wall or something. You might just say, no, you just noticed that secret door. You are so good, you would succeed on this anyway, so I'm just gonna skip that step where I point you towards that clue and just kind of give you that as your reward. You don't necessarily do that every time, but I think when it's something that would be easily be spotted, something that you think it'd be more trouble asking for a skill check than it would be to just tell them, I think you can do that every once in a while, which might make it easier than having to come up with a clue. You can just be like, no, here it is. Here's the thing. There you go. Now you just found it, or now you know what it is.
And I still like, you know, what was mentioned a little bit earlier, just every now and then throw a red herring in there. Like, That's not going to ruin the mystery, you know, especially if there's something more obvious in there. Like, remember, That's Odd is not for stuff like there's a blood stain in the middle of the floor. You know, there is a clue there. You don't necessarily have to give them more about that clue. You can, you know, kind of throw them off a little bit. You know, let him explore both. I don't know. But I do like Luis's idea of reward it. Maybe if you do give him a red herring, maybe they can follow it to like a gold piece or something. You know, that'd be kind of cute. I hope we have solved the mysteries that you have for the investigator, because that's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. And if you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon.com at Patreon. Please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.